think what Commissioner Beard is alluding to. I mean, we can't be the Bank of Escambia where we fund everybody else's ideas. I mean, it has to be a shared, it has to be a shared equity in how we do it.
At the meeting last week, you had the, I don't know, the county commission having committed the whole conversation about the Bay Center. And one of the points that came up was that, you know, if the county is going to be spending the bulk of the money, it's all fine and good if the mayor wants to pay for a comprehensive plan, master plan for the region around the Bay Center. But as Stephen Berry made clear, Isabel, they are the ones who are going to make the ultimate decision. Lumen May saying similar things. Steve Stroberger saying similar things. I thought that was a little bit arrogant. It's sort of true, but also, maybe you don't have to say it out loud quite so much. But I think they're feeling about, you know, the frustrations over OLF 8 and having a similar kind of problem there, being constrained by a master plan that somebody else provided, and they feel like they can't do what they want to do. Well, okay, but this is going to be a collaborative partnership. Joining us now, we have Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Absolutely. So, I mean, what was your takeaway from this meeting? It sounds like they're saying, yes, go ahead and do your little study, but in the end, if it doesn't tell us what we want to hear, then we're going to do what we want to do. I mean, that's a little uncharitable, but how did you feel about it all?
Look, I appreciate them having the conversation, and my goal is to keep our eyes on the prize. And what I mean is, if we're talking about spending upwards of $100 million, let's just use a comparative example. Look at how much time and effort and energy on the city side has been spent on a $15, $16 million demolition of Baptist Hospital. You know, I mean, how much conversation we've had about that. We're talking about $100 million potentially being spent, the vast majority or all downtown. I think the prudent thing to do, and as I mentioned to during the BSEC meeting, you know, I think everybody's heart's in the right place. We've done all these studies over 10 years of time, but they're all isolated. You know, the feasibility of a sports center was done years ago. The feasibility of a conference center might have been done more recently. Who knows, where all of that stands, apples to apples.
Yeah.
So that's all we're trying to do is, as the mayor of this city, and that this amazing investment is potentially happening in the city. If this was anything else, we would be doing this. Let's just take a soccer stadium. If we were to build a soccer stadium somewhere other than this as an isolated project, we would be doing all of these studies around what happens with traffic, what happens with stormwater, whatever the case may be.
Parking, right? Parking is a big part of it, right?
Exactly. So I think it's just a prudent step to make sure that the city is put in a good position. And, let's see what they say. And just one thing on collaboration, we're attempting to set up a joint meeting, I know, between city council and county commission to speak with the firm doing it from day one. And so I want as much inclusion as possible with decision makers to say, hey, if you're worried about, being skeptical of a plan that's been brought to you, then be part of the plan. I mean, and that's what I'm offering, and it's what I offered last week. You know, from day one, ask whatever questions, hear your concerns. I want us all to be part of this, so when we have an end product, we feel like it reflects our concerns, our principles, whatever the case may be. So, I think we're in a good place, and I certainly appreciate their openness to dealing with that, because I think it puts the community in a better place as well.
Yeah, and if you think about this particular problem, I know the county views, for example, the tourism development tax money is, that's money that is theirs to spend. And it's true, but, I have heard some of that money is generated in downtown. So, it's kind of it's a weird thing to sort of be semi chest thumping about who's got the control over the money when obviously downtown is or the city in general is a major contributor to the source of the funds.
Absolutely. But I think look at it this way. Let's take away ownership of where they're generated. Look at it this way. What's the goal of investing bed tax? It's to have the return. I mean, just strictly financial. Forget what you want, what arena you want. The best financial decision we can make is to maximize the return on investment of the bond money. That's what we were saying is let's spend $100 million. So then whether it's conferences or sports or hotel nights or whatever the case may be, that we see a huge return on that investment. And so, it's kind of like the Michael Jordan saying, about politics, I don't vote blue or red, I vote green. I would think that should be the eyes on the prize as it pertains to protecting the taxpayer, because the more of that type of revenue we can generate, the less that's coming from, that needs to come from our local community and that can be coming from the outside. So, you know, I think we can put ourselves in a position to be able to make those decisions. I just don't think we have the documentation in hand yet to make those decisions knowledgeably. I think we've just sort of looking at these things in isolation. And so, so again, I do appreciate their openness to taking a look at it. And, you know, the other thing I mentioned, Andrew, you may have talked about too, is the ability to have private investment involved.
Right.
If a private investor came in and said, we invest in arenas and conference centers and, you know, show us what you have, what would we show them right now?
Yeah.
I mean, what document would we say, hey, here's our plan, here's where we're in alignment. You know, we'd kind of show them random studies over the last 10 years. And so I think having this document also helps us go leverage the private market, and maybe that means it's less taxpayer money. We don't have to fully publicly fund all of these things. If we're smart about it, we could get some private capital to come in and give us more for less.
And we need to do something like this study in order to make that possible. I will say just one last thing before we move on, but is, you know, I think clearly Stephen Berry, who tried to put in an athletic facility up in the, you know, Ashton-Brosnahan, and that did not work, and rightly so. And Lumen May, I think, is very interested in, you know, travel, sports tourism. Obviously, Pensacola Sports is interested in that. And then you have competing interests as well. What I hear you saying is, you know, look, if the study comes back and it says that's really our best alternative, then God, let's do it. I think what they're thinking in their minds is, what if that comes back as B or C? Then we're going to be forced to do something we don't really want to do. I would think it's the other way around. If the city does the study and it turns out to, you know, be the thing that Stephen Berry and Lumen May wanted to do all along, then validation. And if it turns out to be something else, then maybe we should do something else. You seem to want to react, and I went quickly to traffic there, but I didn't know if you had a follow-up you wanted to say on what I was just talking about.
Yeah, just one quick thing to point out. It may not even be as simple as that. The end result could be, hey, look, all two of these or three of these work perfectly fine. Oh, and by the way, the private market has a track record in the last 24 months of funding 75% of a conference center or a sports facility. That changes my math, I can tell you that. If one is $40 million and one is $10 million of taxpayer money,
right?
So there's even more nuance to it in terms of what we learn and, you know, what's marketable, what's feasible to partner with someone else on. So, you know, it's just trying to make our money work. And I think this to the best of its ability. And I think this is the best way to do that and to represent the taxpayer dollars, to say, let's make sure we have all the information and that we're making the right decision.
Yeah, very much agreed. Something else that just happened in the last day, the Hollis T. Williams Stormwater Park plan underneath I-110, this massive, huge, multi-million-dollar project. The sort of final plan asterisk was shown yesterday in a 3D model rendering. Your thoughts? I have not seen it up close and personal. I haven't studied the detail, but it's got some iconic signature elements, like an island that's brought to by three circular or curving pathways. I mean, like, there's some really neat elements here, which reminded me a little bit of that, you know, Swamp Rabbit Trail out of Greenville, or many other places that have similar kinds of iconic signature features that turn a stormwater project into an amenity for people.
Exactly. And, you know, I've always talked about it in linear miles. It's 1.3 miles, but they mentioned yesterday, you know, well over 100 acres by the time. So when you think about that, you don't think of that when you're driving over it, you know, how much land that is that's really been left, you know, neglected and really underutilized. And so trying to maximize that value. So this was the unveiling, and I think there's some media stuff out. I know there's stuff on our website, and the Hollis T. Williams Project has a website as well, but it's but yeah, this was the vision, the final visioning study, which still means they're not picking every bathroom location and every swing set. But this is more of the general overview that you could put things here or here. You could have this football field here or here, that type of thing. So it's starting to kind of narrow the spectrum based on community feedback. And by the way, we're up to, I believe, 23 meetings we've had in the community on this.
Yeah.
And when we've tried to say, you know, I'm proud of our record that we've really tried to redefine what community engagement means. And it's not just one meeting at City Hall one time, you know, is that we go where our neighbors are, where our residents are. And that's again what we did right by Hollis T. Williams at Cobb Center last night. So I'm so grateful to our design team, our city staff, and all, you know, community engagement. The city's only half the battle. You got to have the people show up. And so huge turnout last night, which was awesome. And so really, really excited to see this project continue to move forward and that we can walk the walk. There's $40+ million in stormwater funding, grant funding, to take on the largest stormwater mitigation project in the history of the city. So very exciting stuff, and I know there's lots of enthusiasm in there. There were people there that lived under the interstate, or where the interstate was before it got their houses were taken away and for the construction. So lots of, you know, cool, interesting stories and really poignant stories shared, and so excited to see this thing move forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we're in the middle of several of these sort of, you know, generational transformative projects, whether it's Baptist or whether it's Bayfront Parkway or whether it's, you know, this project under Hollis T. Williams. And I know all these community engagement things are, you know, it's always kind of a show me what you like, show me what you don't like, you know, put the sticker where the engineer hurt you or didn't, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, that's all good. That's all good stuff to have community engagement. And as you say, what did you say, 23? How many was it?
Yeah, 23.
Wow. That's a lot of public engagement.
Yeah.
Switching gears just a little bit, speaking of things that are going on, the Garden Street project right now, nobody likes construction, obviously, but this is FDOT-TPO, long time coming. It is what it is. And again, they're not putting in a border wall down the middle of it. It's just going to be better in the end, right?
That's right. So, yeah, the west from kind of A Street to Pace, this is just a continuation of you've seen the Garden Street kind of, whether it's being repaved or the medians, you know, Garden Street really needed some love, I remember, for many, many years. And so it's starting to get that. But, I mean, these are projects that have been on the books actually preceding me. That's how long they've kind of taken to get going. But, you know, FDOT notified us. And yeah, listen, construction's never going to be easy on folks. We know that. No one wants to be out there any longer than they have to,
right,
whether you're constructing it or whether it's the business. So anyway, they'll get done with that fairly quickly. But the net result is a safer and
more usable,
better conditioned Garden Street.
Just quickly, I had somebody ask me this question, and I don't know how familiar you are, but the Nixle system in Gulf Breeze is where I can basically sign up for text alerts that tell me traffic is bad or other public safety alerts that they want to send me. Does Pensacola have something like that? Would you consider adding something like that for major traffic and or public safety alerts?
Yeah, so we do have that. We do have a system. We have used it sparingly, typically emergency situations, things like that. But I do believe it has a opt-in function that we haven't really optimized. But because obviously what we don't want to do is force a bunch of text messages to people who don't want them.
Right.
But we have started to, you know, once we made sure it was working, we used it some during the cybersecurity incident for our employees back and forth. So things like that. But we've had conversations about looking into that further. So,
okay. Well, Nixle, you know, I'm for Gulf Breeze stuff, it's very useful. And especially for like roadways or the Greed Bridge is flooded, you know, like incidents like that, I think people would appreciate that. And of course, if they don't like it, they can opt out. We always like to end with the lightning round a little bit. First question, this is going to either be weird or land well, but have you ever used your hand, front or back, to show people where in Florida, based on your hand, Pensacola is?
Yes. Many times I have to, when I'm at U.S. Conference of Mayors meetings, I usually say we're the closest city in Florida to California.
That's a funny way to put it.
I have to do the reverse L with two fingers and then like point to my thumbnail, you know.
There you go. That's exactly it. When you're typing on your phone, are you one finger, index finger, two thumbs, one thumb, voice to text only? What do you do?
I am two thumbs.
Two thumbs. Okay,
yeah,
so your thumbs replace your fingers on a keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. That's
Do you ever turn the phone sideways and use the expanded keyboard that's available in landscape layout?
No, I don't feel like that's cool. I've got to be moving, and you know that looks too concentrated. You know, I've got to just. You know.
I didn't even know that was an available option. I have not tried it much yet, but I'm eager to find out. Last one, when you're driving a car, what do you prefer? Stick, automatic with paddle shifters? What do you prefer?
Can you even find a stick shift car anymore? But I will say, people say I'm a young mayor. My first two cars were stick shift, and now it's a sense of pride that now, no matter where I am in the world, I can safely get us moving around in a car. You go to South America, you don't get an automatic option sometimes. So, I was a stick shift driver all from 16 to 21, basically. So I guess I'm a dying breed.
Same for me, much longer. And the advantage of that is if you actually drive a stick, you know nobody under 30 is going to steal it. Mayor D.C. Reeves, sure. Always good to talk to you, sir. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Andrew.